Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with David M. O'Malley, MD, a professor in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at The Ohio State University College of Medicine, as well as the Director of the Division of Gynecologic Oncology, Director of Clinical Research in Gynecologic Oncology, and Co-Director of the Gynecologic Oncology Phase 1 Program at the OSU Comprehensive Cancer Center, James, to discuss key findings from six trials that were presented at the virtual 2021 SGO Annual Meeting on Women's Cancer. In our exclusive interview, O'Malley discussed the key takeaways from several trials that were presented during the 2021 SGO Annual Meeting on Women's Cancer, including the Phase 3 KEYNOTE-775 and SORAYA trials, the Phase 2 NRG-GY012 trial, and more. So starting with the Phase 3 KEYNOTE-775 trial, what did you find most intriguing about the results that were presented at the SGO meeting this year?
The results of 775 were probably the most impressive and important results we've seen in endometrial cancer in generations. Really showed that the biologic therapy lenvatinib and pembrolizumab far outperformed physician choice chemotherapy with doxorubicin or weekly paclitaxel. When we look at these improvements, not only in progression-free survival, but as well as overall survival, in these very hard to treat patients. And you look at the overall response rates, basically doubling in the lenvatinib pembro arm with 30% versus 15%. And we saw 5% of patients in the lenvatinib pembro arm actually have complete responses. We look at the overall duration response, 9.2 months versus 5.7, not quite doubling, but very impressive. And we obviously look at the median progression-free and overall survivals, progression-free survival being about 6.5 months versus 3.8 months. But overall survival actually having a higher difference at 17 months versus approximately 12 months. So we're really seeing improvement in how patients are living longer. Now, what else was impressive about these findings? Well, the toxicities which we encountered with this regimen. But it's important to put that in context. As we look at our recent history in our PARP inhibitor trials and phase 3 maintenance trials, the discontinuation rate in those trials for the active treatment arms was about 60, 65%. And what do we see in the dose reduction with 60 to 65%? And we see the same thing in the lenvatinib pembro. Dose reduction is about 67%. Now, a big difference though was the discontinuation rate. Discontinuation rate in most PARP trials was about 10, 11%. But on this trial, we had approximately 30% discontinuation rate when we're looking at the lenvatinib pembro arm. Now, clearly, when we have doubling of our overall response rate and almost doubling of our duration response, your discontinuation rate is going to be higher as you are on treatment longer. But I think you see in this phase 3 trial, practitioners were using this combination potentially for the first time in dealing with the toxicities. We really need to have a multidisciplinary and proactive approach and deal with the toxicity of lenvatinib and pembro. And when we look at that, we have to intervene early. I see these patients weekly when I start them on therapy, or my team does, I should say. And when I say see them, that may be a video visit or telephone visit, but we make sure we touch base. Most of the toxicities are going to be in the first two cycles, or onset of toxicities, I should say, will be in the first two cycles. And it's important to be proactive.
And it must have been exciting to see these data, given that, you know, we had the accelerated approval of the combination earlier, and now we have confirmatory phase 3 evidence supporting the combination's use.
Well, having a confirmatory phase 3 trial after a single arm phase 2 trial is very reassuring. The difference in these patients is we really didn't have any options after the combination of carboplatin and paclitaxel. And so when we saw these results presented by Vicky Macker originally, we saw that patients who are those patients that are most difficult to treat, the serous cancer of the uterus, the clear cell of the uterus, having such marked responses, many of us were quick to start using this regimen as our second line therapy. Of course, we also have learned about the toxicity, but it's always reassuring to see a positive phase 3 trial, not just for progression-free survival, but for overall survival, confirming what we'd seen in the phase 2 trial, marked responses and clinical benefit of these to these patients.
Moving on to the phase 2 NRG-GYN-012 trial, what did you find most compelling about these results?
GYN-012, presented by Joyce Liu at the recent annual meeting of the SGO, was an exciting trial that enrolled very quickly in looking at biologic therapy for the treatment of patients with recurrent metastatic endometrial cancer. It was a 3-arm trial comparing single-agent cedaranib, a pan-TKI, olaparib, a PARP inhibitor, or the combination of those two agents. This was set up as a randomized phase 2 design and looking at comparing them to historical controls. Now, numerically, the cedaranib-olaparib combination arm did better, but because it did not reach its historical benchmark, the cedaranib single agent arm was considered the arm to move forward in further testing. This trial has been approved to move forward 3 additional arms utilizing olaparib plus a pan-AKT inhibitor, olaparib and durva versus cedaranib and durva, a PD-1 inhibitor. And as we look to trying to find biologic therapies, additional biologic therapies to treat endometrial cancer, we're excited that the NCI and CTEP have decided to move forward with 3 important arms to be studied in this difficult to treat patient population. We applaud these efforts, but would hope that they would see the importance of having trials designed like this where we can add arms in to study these important combination therapies and to answer, should we move forward in further evaluation if we see an exciting result.
Now, moving even earlier to phase 1b study with AVB-500 and paclitaxel, though still some time away from potentially entering the clinic, what makes this agent unique and why is it worth studying?
AVB-500 and weekly paclitaxel, Catherine Fu presented her phase 1 data. And I'm happy to say, based on some exciting results from this trial, a phase 3 trial has been designed and is already enrolling. Now, as we look at the response rates in this, again, small phase 1 with an escalation cohort, we had approximately 37% response rate with this novel GASX or AXL inhibitor. And when we look at the mechanism of action of this, it's a very interesting mode to try to overcome chemotherapy resistance. And when we look at the toxicity of the agent, essentially there was no additive toxicities to those that are experienced in weekly paclitaxel. So it's very important to see that we have an agent by itself probably has limited activity, but when combined with cytotoxic, we may be able to overcome resistance to those cytotoxic therapies with an agent which doesn't add to the side effects of our cytotoxic chemotherapy.
In terms of the phase 3 SORAYA trial, what were the important findings?
So SORAYA, which is mirtuximab in a single-arm, 110-person trial, looking at patients with high folate receptor alpha. This trial will be important because it's going to potentially be a regulatory pathway for mirtuximab moving forward in accelerated approval pathway. When we look at the patients who respond to mirtuximab, it's become clear most recently that those with the high folate receptor alpha seem to benefit the most from mirtuximab. This trial will be enrolling patients with platinum-resistant ovarian cancer 1 to 3 priors using mirtuximab at 6 mg/kg in adjusted ideal body weight. This trial, I understand, is enrolling well and hopefully we'll see the results of it shortly. Those that presented the recent SGO as a trial in progress.
Now, in terms of the phase 2 trial with farletuzumab and chemotherapy, where might this combination play a role?
Farletuzumab combined with platinum-based chemotherapy, either paclitaxel or paclitaxel-like doxorubicin, was reported by my good friend Tom Herzog at this most recent SGO. Unfortunately, that trial, which was a 2-to-1 randomization designed as a large phase 2 trial in platinum-sensitive ovarian cancer in patients with a low level of CA125. Now, low level of CA125 is defined as approximately less than 105 or 3 times the upper limit of normal for CA125. And unfortunately, in that trial, there was really no difference between the outcomes based on progression-free survival, or overall response rate. So unfortunately, though this agent at times has looked exciting as a potential option for the treatment of ovarian cancer, currently this trial was negative, and I don't believe there's plans to move forward for further development in ovarian cancer.
Finally, there's the phase 1 trial with mirvetuximab and rucaparib, an interesting combination. What did we see there?
Mirvetuximab and rucaparib was presented as a phase 1 trial by one of the smartest people I know, Dr. Flor Backus, who happens to be my partner here at The Ohio State University. I'm honored to be a part of this exciting trial. This trial enrolled patients in a dose escalation, then expansion, with mirvetuximab plus rucaparib in patients who expressed folate receptor alpha, either low, medium, or high levels. To me, the most exciting thing about this trial, though the results are exciting in this small phase 1 trial with an expansion cohort, is the potential opportunity to have 2 biomarkers be evaluated, meaning folate receptor alpha and potentially homologous recombination deficiency. Dr. Backus did not present her data on the HRD results based on the patient population, but interesting results in those evaluable for response. Ovarian cancer, 13 ovarian cancer patients had approximately 43% response rate, and endometrial cancer patients had approximately 50% response rate. Again, we're talking small numbers here that were evaluable, and so it's important to note that. Another exciting aspect of this trial was the progression-free survival at 6 months was approximately 60% in ovarian cancer patients and 40% in endometrial cancer. So not only are we seeing some responses, we're also seeing sustained responses, and we're exciting to also see the duration of response of 7 and 5 months respectively. So this is a small trial, but really the first time we've reported nearly normal doses of mirvetuximab, which was dosed at 5 rather than 6, and rucaparib was dosed at 400 rather than 600 in the expansion cohort. So nearly normal doses of both of these agents combined together with a reasonable toxicity profile.
A mixed bag of results here at this SGO meeting, but some very promising results nonetheless. What is your hope for the future of research in ovarian and endometrial cancer?
My hope for the future of research in ovarian endometrial cancer is more personalized medicine. We're finally starting to develop biomarkers and identify groups of patients who are going to benefit most from those therapies we are evaluating. From homologous recombination deficiency to MSI high to folate receptor alpha high expressors. All of these patients will have an option to have the optimal therapy at the optimal time in the future as we become better at our molecular testing, our biomarkers, and targets against those that allow our patients to have the best quality of life for the longest overall survival.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives in cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.